Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You were so sure was real. What if you were unable to wake from that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream world and the real world?
What is happening to me?
The answer is out there, Neo. It's the question that drives us.
What is the Matrix?
Hello and welcome to Rewatchability. We are a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is
J.M. McNabb.
And we are going to talk about a huge movie, a very beloved movie that has a sequel coming out very soon. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, we should thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us a few dollars every month to help us keep the podcast running, the simulation of life running.
Yeah, it takes a lot of like human beings and gelatinous pods to power our laptops to record this show. So thank you.
It's at least one.
Yeah, it's Blaine.
Blaine.
That's where he's been.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we love you Patreons. Now we have paused the Patreon for the month of whichever month this is, December, because we haven't been able to record episodes most of the month, but
we're back, baby.
Well,
It was on for December and it's paused now going forward. So yeah, we had a bit of an interruption in terms of recording. I was able to do one last week with our friend Sina Romani. If you haven't checked that out, we had a really good conversation about A Christmas Carol. But man, it's been hectic. It's been crazy.
Yeah,
you've been busy with school. I've been busy with my children bringing home illnesses from daycare and school. And on top of that, like the pandemic is going nuts again here where we are. So, yeah, it's just been nuts. But I am glad we were able to do a few this month anyway.
And yeah, absolutely.
We did a Christmas one last week. We were going to do another Christmas one. I mean, that was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I were talking and we've pretty much run out of Christmas movies.
We've done them all.
Like, unless we want to like dip into like, you know, Hallmark movies starring Rob Lowe and, you know, Jenny Garth or something. Yeah. But we've done a lot of the big ones. There are a lot of like, you know, nostalgic ones for people our age.
Yeah. I mean, there might be a few here and there that we can think of. But yeah, for the most part, I don't know. What about the Santa Claus, that Dudley Moore one with John Lithgow?
Santa Claus the movie?
Yeah.
You know, I almost suggested that, but then I thought, I don't want to watch that movie again. That was one that was like always at Christmas time. That was always on like the local Fox affiliate, like
right.
Sunday afternoons. They always just put like the shittiest Christmas movies. It was either that or Ernest Saves Christmas. It was just like the cheapest Christmas movies they could get their hands on.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, in our defense, I'm going to argue that the movie that we're talking about this week is, in a way, a Christmas movie, if you think about it, right? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
well,
I don't have to spell it out to you guys, do I? I mean, we're talking about The Matrix. Yes, The Matrix 4 happens to be coming out soon. I think that it's sort of doing a preview premiere thing in Toronto right now. I think Keanu Reeves is in the city promoting that movie as we speak.
I just literally the moment before we started recording, I was on Twitter and saw someone sharing a video of Keanu coming out at the premiere of The Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's why, baby. I said to you, I was like, I kind of want to watch The Matrix again because I want to see the new movie, but it's not a Christmas movie. And then you reminded me that it's basically about computer Jesus.
Yeah. You know who else was resurrected? The Lord.
Well, also, like, yeah, it is very unsubtle in this movie. Like, I think the first time meet his character, like, one of the characters was like, Jesus Christ. No, they say it. They're like, Jesus. But then he's like, look at you, or something like that. Yeah. It's extremely unsubtle.
Yeah.
And not to mention, his love interest literally being named Trinity. This is not a subtle movie, but The Matrix is what we're talking about. I think I might watch the other two before the new one too, because I barely remember those.
Okay, I mean, are you stoked for Matrix Resurrections? I mean, we haven't got into this. Maybe we should go back and talk about our experiences. Why don't you start us off with your experience of the first Matrix movie, Little JM, in front of the movie screen.
I was like 14 or 15. I can't remember. But yeah, this is another 1999 movie. I know I said when we did Magnolia that I typically don't like doing 99 movies because they're so discussed, in podcasts and culture in general. But I really wanted to. How can we not talk about it? It was like a seminal movie for our generation and the new one's coming out. But I saw it opening night. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but there was a movie theater pretty much across the street from my high school that was built in grade 9. So literally, like, when I started school, this movie theater went in. So I remember going, I don't remember there probably was like a fair bit of hype about it. Like, there was advertising and stuff, but, like, I don't remember there being that. Like, it wasn't even released in the summertime, I don't think, was it?
I don't know.
Like, I just remember it being like, yeah, this looks cool, let's go see it. And I remember going, and because, like I said, the theater was across from the high school, so I think I went after school. It was probably, 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock or something. And the whole theater was just filled with all of the nerds that went to my school. It was just like they had taken
glasses as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It was just if they'd taken all of the kids that were sitting in the cafeteria at lunchtime, just, playing magic cards and stuff. Like, it was just like they transplanted the cafeteria into the movie theater. I knew them all. Like, some of them were just like, oh, yeah, I've seen that guy walking around. He's a big nerd. And of course, and there I am. My friends. But yeah, so I don't even remember being like that excited for it. And I really liked it, I think. But again, it wasn't like a huge movie for me. I mean, it's hard to even like totally remember because it was so parodied after that. And like not even just like, in the years afterwards. I mean, like immediately. Mm-hmm. It immediately, hit the zeitgeist and spawned all of these parodies and imitations and jokes, and it just became immediately ubiquitous in the culture. And so it is like hard to separate from, like, I'm racking my brain trying to remember how I actually like thought of it as a movie at the time. Like, I know I enjoyed it because I bought it on VHS when it came out, and I saw it once or twice, but I haven't returned to it in easily 15 years, 20 years, maybe even.
Think that's because of the sort of reaction to the second and third movies? Like, those not being so successful, sort of like, it seemed to like sort of sully the whole franchise in a way.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. Like, I do remember being more excited for the second one and going to see it. And that one I've never revisited. So I am going to watch that again this week, I think. But like, I remember going to see that in the theater and not hating it because a lot of stuff happens in it, but also being, like a lot of people, kind of perplexed by certain things and straight up confused about a lot of the, like, you know, mythological story points that happened in that movie, but also, like, obviously, like, the crazy rave at the beginning was unexpected for, you know, how 17-year-old JM or whoever it was. But, you know, I think I will be looking at that movie certainly a lot differently because, you know, I love movies that are like big swings, you know, and I think like the post-Matrix Wachowski movies are all like big swings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
Speed Racer.
I love Speed Racer. Absolutely adore Speed Racer. What was it? Cloud Atlas. Not a movie I necessarily liked, but like I kind of admire it for taking the chances it did. Like they made a movie that like was widely criticized for being super racist and they were trying to like fix racism, you know, like they were trying to do this like universal like message about how we're all deep down connected.
Hanks.
Yeah. And they ended up like making some really offensive, like racialized prosthetics.
Big swing.
Well, yeah, no, but I do kind of like, none of their movies or TV shows have been boring, I don't think, with the possible exception of the third Matrix movie. Like, I don't know enough about the making of this franchise. And I know a lot of people do. Like, this podcast is, I didn't do a ton of research. I'm mainly going to be talking about, like, my personal experience with this movie. As opposed to, like, you know, there's so much to talk about tangentially with the sort of universe that spawned. But I think, like, the sense that I got certainly from just watching the movies was they had this hit movie. They utilized its success to do a huge second one. Like, it's so, you know, complex and daring. And there's that big chase scene at the end. And then it feels by like the time the third one comes around that everyone just ran out of gas. Like, it seemed like maybe they wanted to move on. Again, I don't know if that's true, but that's what it felt like. I know that was the first one I didn't see in the theater. I think I rented it when it came out because I was like angry.
That's a big snub for you.
I wasn't like angry or I didn't even dislike the second one that much. It was just like, it felt like we'd all kind of moved past that. And like I said, it was so big that it was hard to like, to make those ideas like novel again. Because we'd all experienced so much of the Matrix in just those few years. Sorry, I've been talking for a long time. What about you? When did you see it?
I didn't see it until a few years after it came out. I have to admit that I was not a big fan of The Matrix when it came out. I saw it, I think, on the Movie Network, but by that time, it was already ubiquitous. It was already everywhere. Yeah, like you said, it was parodied by everything. Also, it influenced everything. Like, all of a sudden, like, bullet time and slow motion and wire work and kung fu was showing up in, like, all sorts of places. And also, like, you know, it also brought, like, the Matrix aesthetic into the world. Like, everybody was wearing, like, you know, long PVC trench coats and, you know, with big pants, like techno pants. There's techno everywhere, you know, and it just wasn't my scene. I didn't relate to it. I liked computers. I think at that point, you know, I was sort of over Keanu Reeves. He had become like a bit of a joke as a performer because he hadn't sort of found the stride that he's found now where, you know, he's lovable, he plays himself, he kicks a lot of ass, and you know he's a good guy, so you like him anyway. But at that point, he'd done a lot of like bad blockbuster movies that didn't connect, some that did, like Speed, but I don't know, this movie, it didn't really speak to me. Now, after, you know, a long time after the sequels came out, I did give it another chance and sort of re-explored it and watched it and thought, yeah, this is okay. And I remember reading a lot about it in grad school because it's one of those things that people love to write about in grad school because it's a lot easier to write about, you know, a movie than it is to read some more boring philosophy or whatever. But I sort of came to understand that it is like, you know, a deep and rich movie, and a movie that sort of does a lot of really interesting and cool things, even though there's a lot of it that I still find kind of annoying. I feel like it's just one of those things where it was like so big. It's like one of those bands that's so big, their fans like just annoy the hell out of you, like a U2 or a Dave Matthews Band or something like that. I don't know why those two came to mind, but I
do think with the new one, like, I'm more excited for it just because, well, for one thing, it's just Lana making it, and it just feels like to return to it after all this time, like, I think she probably has, you know, like, must have like a passion for this take, because, and judging from the trailer, like, it's very intriguing, like, it's very mysterious, like. Like I said before, with the third one, it felt perfunctory. It felt like they were obligated to make a trilogy and needed to wrap it up. Whereas this feels like, if we're coming back to it all these years later, it feels a little more deliberate or exciting. Like, I'm excited for the new movie, to be honest.
Okay.
It's not my aesthetic necessarily. Like the whole. Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, we'll talk about it as we get into the movie, but it was, and also like that time, there's so much to talk about, because like I remember being in school and kids dressing like that because of The Matrix, and then like a couple of months later, Columbine happening, and then it being like,
no trench coats.
I specifically remember there was one kid that wore like the long trench coat, the black trench coat and the sunglasses, obviously a huge Matrix fan. And I remember, like, the morning that we got to school and Columbine had happened, he came in the same outfit, and, like, one of the kids in the class turned to him and just went, really? Like, really? Today you're going to? And, I don't even totally remember because I was a kid, but, like, there was some controversy about that. Maybe we'll get into that more later, but, like, weird time.
It was a crazy time.
Stuff I hadn't thought about until just now when I was watching the movie.
Someday somebody's going to be looking back at these times and saying that, presumably talking about some other movie. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe The Matrix 4.
Yeah. Everybody started wearing black trench coats again.
They're back. Nobody leaves their house, but everybody's wearing these black trench coats.
We found out black trench coats work better than face masks.
Well, then there'd be those people who don't, who are anti-black trench coat.
I hate those people. All right, well, do you want to get into the rundown for The Matrix?
Yeah, I will. So it starts with, we sort of overhear a bit of surveillance. There are these two people, these voices, talking about watching this person, and, you know, they're questioning whether he is the one or whether this guy Morpheus is right about something like this. And then we see these cops sort of burst into this building, and they sort of give chase to Carrie Ann Moss, who is, you know, she like escapes and she's like jumping over the rooftops and doing all that sort of stuff. And it's, you know, it's really impressive. It's like a, you know, very exciting start to the movie. And all of that happens. Cut to Keanu Reeves. He is sleeping at his computer desk. We've all been there. He is a programmer and a hacker, I guess, but he's really burning, you know, the candle at both ends, because he's, by night he's selling programs to like sketchy people, and by day he goes into his programmer job and gets yelled at. But
yeah, what were those? Because he's selling like these like mini disc things that like really did not take off. Like
I remember this is another. But the sound quality was amazing.
Yeah. This is going to be just like an episode full of mostly personal anecdotes, but I remember going with my friends to like a computer convention, because his dad was like, I guess his dad worked in computers or something. It had like a booth. It was at like the convention center. So we wandered around and it was fun, because they had like, before Virtua Boy came out, like the Nintendo thing, they had the Virtua Boy there, and I got to test it out, and it was not good.
Did you hurt your neck?
No, it was okay. But I remember one guy had like those like mini, it's like a CD, a tiny CD, but yeah. in like a disc thing.
Yeah.
And I remember the guy showing me them being like, this is going to like change the world. Like, this is the next huge thing.
It did.
Oh, okay.
No.
But yeah, so what is he selling those guys? Is it just like bootlegs of Carmen Sandiego or what?
Probably.
What is he giving
yeah,
those
I don't know. It's some sort of it could be anything, but I mean it's not legal, which is, you know, I think gives motivation to why he's like running from the authorities in the real world when they come after him. But something weird happens to him. His computer starts to talk to him. I mean, it starts typing things like, you know, bloop, 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 and it tells him to wake up, and then it tells him a whole bunch of other crazy shit, and to follow the white rabbit, which, I mean, to me, that says take LSD, right? But
means,
he doesn't do that.
It means stock gray slick. But yeah, that was also like, well, I guess they knew it was going to happen because it was like in The Matrix, but it's like... He follows the people that are buying Carmen Sandiego off of him, and one of them has a tattoo with a rabbit. But if she hadn't turned just like that to kind of show off her tattoo, he wouldn't have known to go with them to this nightclub. I mean, they could have just like emailed him the address of the nightclub.
Send a Facebook invite.
Yeah,
that's what I would do.
You ever have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming?
All the time. It's called mescaline. It's the only way to fly. Hey, look, it just sounds to me like, you know, you need to unplug, man. You know, get some R&R. Hey, what do you think, Deshore? Should we take him with us?
Definitely.
I can't. I have work tomorrow.
Come on. It'll be fun. I promise.
But I don't, you know, the one thing about this movie is I don't understand how computers work in The Matrix. Like, why is all the text green? Like, that's not a thing in real life.
Well, it's not real life. It's The Matrix. What I don't understand is, I mean, okay, we're getting to, you know, we're going to find out that he's in The Matrix.
He's in The Matrix.
This is all a computer simulation.
Yeah.
But it's a computer simulation where, like, all of these hackers... who are so good at computers that they've, you know, are able to, like, enter and exit the Matrix via, like, landlines. Okay, for one thing, my first thought was, why didn't the machines just set it in 2021? Because there are no landlines anywhere, so they wouldn't be able to get in and out of the Matrix. And then I thought, wait, that's stupid. Why didn't they create a fantasy world where it's, like, the Middle Ages? Like, why have any computers?
yeah. Damn.
There's really no reason to have it set in 1999. That's just inviting trouble.
Maybe they like the challenge, you know? It's one of those, like, oppositional forces things. Like, you know, the computers can't live without the humans. The humans can't live without the computers. Like, do they really even need to be, like, sucking the energy out of these people? That can't be, like, a viable, renewable resource, right?
No, it's not. In fact, I think I wrote something about it once and looked into it, and it was, like, the amount of energy a human would supply was something like a couple of AA batteries or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but the point was that the amount of energy you could extract from a whole bunch of human bodies would be far less than like the power you would need to just run the Matrix alone.
Yeah, so it seems like this is more of like a hobby farm than like a sustainable growing operation.
Yeah, or at least like, I mean, if all of these people are being born into the Matrix, like, make the graphics worse. Like, have it be like a Nintendo 64 game or something. Like, they don't know the difference.
Yeah, yeah. They just think that's what it's like. It's all 2D. You gotta have a talk with these computers, man. They have no good ideas. It needs a human touch to, like, really, really make it cruel and unusual. But, yeah, I mean, he eventually is given the choice by Morpheus whether or not to go back into reality
or join the alt-right.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's another way that this movie has influenced reality, and not in a good way, is the whole red pill thing, which is so weird and confusing why those people would latch on to that as a metaphor.
Yeah. But, did you see that like Twitter exchange where it was, I can't remember, it was like Ivanka Trump or someone. Someone was like, I've been red pilled. And someone else was like, me too. And then Lana Wachowski commented and was like, fuck you.
I did see that.
That was good.
That was pretty great. It was pretty great. Yeah, but he decides that he wants to experience reality as it really is, and so he takes the blue pill, whichever one takes.
The red one.
Yeah, that's the one that, you know, makes him see things, and that's the one that they're going to bring him out. I'm not even sure what the pill is. I guess they say, oh yeah, the pill is so that they can trace him and find his body.
Right. It's a laxative.
We just go to the body with the diarrhea.
Yeah.
This one's dripping. Oh. That's disgusting.
Yeah, so they find him. He's in the naked pod.
I mean, this part's crazy. I mean, this part's like one of my favorite like images from the movie, even though like it does seem like they probably owe H.R. Giger some money for like those black powder painted cords and everything like that. That's one of those things. But yeah. I mean, it's such like a crazy, yeah, such like a crazy thought, you know, just to like think of like, yeah, like all those people in all those pods and just like endless skyscrapers full of them.
So when, if like, okay.
But that kind of feels like what it's like now.
Yeah, that's true. I thought it looked comfy.
Honestly, like, if we're going into another wave, I think it's maybe time to just ask for some Matrix, you know? Like, if the computers can just maybe make us a Matrix without COVID-19, I think that's maybe a good idea.
Okay, yeah. Oh, but okay, so like, in the Matrix, if a couple, like, has sex and then they have a baby, do the robots grow them one of those babies so the baby is real and aging in real time? Or is the baby like ever a part of the simulation? You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, does the Matrix have to like play matchmaker between people to like give lives to all of these other like babies that they're plugging in?
Right. That's it just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
For these robots. I feel bad for the robots, which I don't think is what you're supposed to take away from this movie.
It's probably all they have to do. I mean, what is the point? I mean, what do you do when you're a robot and you've conquered humanity? Like, what purpose do you have? Like, what meaning do you find out of existence?
Yeah, I do think that they are supposed to be somewhat sympathetic. Like, I remember the Animatrix, which I don't really want to get into too much because I haven't watched that in 20 years either, but I've watched some of it. And like, there is like an extended flashback that shows you like the sort of origin of the human robot war. And like, it makes it clear that the robots were very nice and humans were awful.
Well, and, I like, find that hard to believe.
I mean, they do say in this movie, like, Lawrence Fishburne's like, well, we don't know exactly what happened, but we know that the humans nuked the sun.
Yeah, no, it's like they scoured the sky or something. I'm not really clear what
happened. They blew
with
up
that.
The sun, Rob.
No, that's not a thing that
it
anybody
is.
Can do. How?
I don't know, but he says that's what they did because the robots were solar powered. So they thought if they blew up the sun, they'd be able to cut off their power, right?
Well, they would all freeze. I mean, if there was no sun, wouldn't everything instantly turn into ice?
It was a bad plan.
Fucking humans.
Yeah. So now he's on Lawrence Fishburne's ship. They're all wearing like tattered sweaters.
It's very like the Gap.
That's
it. 3 years ago.
That's one of the few buildings that wasn't destroyed. Just like a lone, like Old Navy.
Yeah, not even the robots wanted it.
No.
But, the whole
They're all just wearing
there.
Like tattered sweaters and like tattered like Super Mario t-shirts.
We have clothes that isn't ripped. No, man. This is the post-apocalyptic wasteland. Yeah. But they have all the other guys there. I mean, first of all, Lawrence Fishburne, watching this again, is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, like, he's crazy good. Like, his presence is so intense, and I was, like, I mean, he's great in everything, but, yeah, he was fantastic.
He's one of those guys, I know it's a cliche, but he could read the phone book and you'd be like, wow, that sounds like The Matrix.
Yeah.
Because
he's
Lawrence
not in
Fishburne.
The new Matrix movie.
I know. Yeah. That's too bad.
And he seems like, I don't know if you saw, I don't know if it was a tweet or whatever, but he put out a little statement or said something about it and it was like, oh, they did not deem to call Lawrence Fishburne this time. I guess perhaps this will spur him to write that next play.
Okay. I love Lawrence Fishburne, man. I wish I had like run into him when he was in Toronto filming Hannibal for all those years.
I saw the back of his head.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it was magnificent.
Yeah, no, he's so good. And yeah, I love that, like, he also, like, he plays more than I think anyone else in the movie. Like, he gets these kind of two notes to play where, like, when we meet him as Morpheus in The Matrix, like, he's like the coolest guy. You know, he's got the sunglasses with no arms that I don't mm-hmm. totally understand how they stay on his head.
I think they pinch his nose.
Which, just as someone who has glasses that fall off my head even with the arms, like, just made me nervous that they were going to fall off all the time. But so he's got this, you know, I mean, he's almost, you know, like a god or something. Like, he's got mm-hmm. all the answers. He's super cool. He's otherworldly. And then when we meet him in The Nebuchadnezzar, because everything is named after something biblical in this movie.
Just in case you don't get it.
Yeah. We're on our way to Zion. But when we meet him there, like, it's like a subtle change. He's still obviously the same guy, but like robbed of the fashion and everything else. And also he has this like desperation about, you know, believing in Neo when no one else does. Like, I don't know. Like he almost does nothing different, but it feels different when we meet him in the real world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't go back, can I?
No. But if you could, would you really want to? I feel I owe you an apology. We have a rule. We never free a mind once it's reached a certain age. It's dangerous. The mind has trouble letting go. I've seen it before, and I'm sorry. I did what I did because I had to.
So there's like, there's a whole motley crew of people with a whole bunch of weird names. There's a guy named Mouse. There's a Tank and Dozer and Switch and all of them.
Skippy
and Blue and... Andy, I think, is there as well.
Yeah.
But
Boner, the character from Growing Pains, he was there.
Yeah, and this is where Keanu Reeves sort of, you know, he has to get used to, first of all, like, being alive in the real world. Like, his muscles have atrophied, and they have to, like, do a bunch of things to make him better. He can't see very well, or, I mean, his eyes hurt. But also, this is where they teach him all of his karate shit. Like, they hook him up to the machine, and they just download all of these programs into him. Like, you wouldn't download a car, but you would download a jiu-jitsu lesson? It's stealing.
Okay, first of all, it's kung fu. That's a very famous line.
Okay, well, he learns all of them. It's, you know. He also learns drunken boxing, which I think is a reference to the fight choreographer.
Right, who did Drunken Master, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I have to say, rewatching it now, I got a little bored.
Yeah.
In this part. Yeah. All the stuff on the ship I could have done without. I mean, I guess it's important, but...
It's weird, but, you know, I think it's sort of like... A lot of this movie is very video gamey, obviously. I mean, you know, it's influenced by, I think, video games, and it feels very much like a video game, and it takes place in computers. And, you know, this whole part is very much like, you know, level one, like, you know, learning the skills, like getting your ass kicked. It's like the demo portion of, like, a video game. So, yeah, I mean, it's boring, but it also feels like, you know, like an essential part of the journey.
Sure, yeah,
And this is also where we get, like, a lot of the exposition about The Matrix as well, though. It's like, you know, just like people, like, sitting around the breakfast table being like, yo, the humans fought The Matrix, and we lost, and this is why we're here, and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then when it really kind of, like, starts to get more exciting is when we find out that Joe Pantoliano, who plays Scooby.
Cypher. Yeah.
He is going to betray everybody.
Believe it or not, because Joey Pants is playing a weasel.
But it's his love of steak. He misses steak. They're all eating like this gruel that's like protein supplement.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you could sell that for like $15 a bowl on Queen West, you know?
That's true. Yeah. If you said it was organic craft gruel.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all eating this stuff. But Joey Pantoliano wants some steak.
He
goes to a fancy restaurant with Hugo Weaving, who we haven't talked about, as Agent Smith.
Yeah, famously. I mean, this is sort of his breakout role was Agent Smith for sure.
He's so good. He's terrific in this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, Joey Pants, he would rather have the bliss of the Matrix, the world where things, you know, are fake but feel real, than the Matrix, which is real but sucks. Oh, wait, the non-Matrix. I don't know what to call the world outside of the Matrix.
Sweaterville? okay, wait, sorry, just a quick detour. Which would you do? Which pill would you take? Political connotations aside, would you want the ignorance is bliss, steaks in a fancy restaurant, cipher path, or would you rather live in the real world with all of its hardships, knowing that it's genuine?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that I would take the red pill and be aware of the world in its genuine form. They asked this question to Lily and Lana Wachowski, and they both said that they would take the blue pill and stay in the ignorant world of dreams. But
really?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think if it came down to it, I might just take the easy way out, you know? Just hook me up to that machine, baby, and give me that steak, you know?
I need
comfort.
Well, you know what's gross about that is that they do say in the explanation part that, like, when you're eating food in the Matrix, it might taste like steak, but it's actually like the, like, repurposed dead bodies of the other people being fed to you. So that, I mean, yeah, knowing that.
That's actually a bonus for me.
Oh, okay. That's okay. We're just going to move right past
Soylent that. Green.
But, you know, I was thinking about it, and like, maybe this is revealing about me, but like, I was just thinking about like all the stuff you could like all the contents, not content, but like arts and literature and film and all, like, presumably, if this is an accurate representation of the year 1999, like, they would have all of the movies up until 1999.
Matrix.
Yeah, but they would have, you know, like, all of the books and all of the records. And you know what I mean? Like, they are, in a way, I hate to keep defending the robots here, but, like, they are, like, these cultural preservationists.
Yeah.
Who have kind of, like,
saved. They're like the Library of Congress.
Yeah. They have, like, preserved this, you know, humanity's greatest achievements.
After humanity destroyed it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, you go in the Nebuchadnezzar and there's not a book. I doubt there's a magazine. Like,
no.
What are you supposed to do?
They're just listening to techno all day.
You just have, it's just raves every day. It's just erotic raves. and again, like, if I have to choose, honestly, I probably have to go, you know, I would rather, you know, read a nice book from time to time.
Yeah. But I think, you know, what this movie is saying allegorically, I mean, the choice that you make, you make that choice every day in life, you know, whether to be ignorant of, you know, the way that the world is and with all of its miseries and how it's bad in places, and or we can ignore it, we can take the blue pill and sort of, you know, live in a world of television, just watch, you know, just escapism. I mean, that's the sort of choice that we can make every day. I mean, and to some extent, we probably take both pills, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think also, like, especially with, you know, throughout the pandemic, like, that's been something people have been modulating even more, like, quickly than before. Like, I mean, you know, there are days where I just feel like I can't read the news today.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, and yeah, and I'll watch, you know.
Another pointless remake.
Yeah. No, but it, you know, the news is so awful. I'd rather like watch an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation than, you know, find out something important. You know what I mean? But yeah, so I think that you're right. That's something we have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. But so,
Some days I put on my Ray-Bans and run around looking for payphones that are still left.
Yeah. So Joey Pants betrays them. Oh, yeah. And this scene where Joey Pants calls Carrie Ann Moss and he's like, you know, giving a creepy monologue while he's murdering all of her friends by pulling out the thing while they're in the Matrix. And as you know, if you die in the Matrix, you die in real life. Just like if you die in podcasting, you die in real life. Is that a thing?
Oh, shit.
But, this scene, I mean, I also, like, this scene really gets me every time, too. Like, especially, like, when Switch dies, you know, as she's, like, looking over the body of her fallen comrade. It's really terrible.
But you're out, Cypher. You can't go back.
Oh, no, that's what you think.
You're gonna reinsert my body. I go back to sleep, and when I wake up, I won't remember a goddamn thing.
By the way, if you have anything terribly important to say to the Switch,
I suggest you say it now.
Oh, no, please don't.
Not like this. Not like this.
Too late.
God damn you, Cypher!
Don't hate me, Trinity. I'm just a messenger.
And Joey Pants, I mean, god damn you, Joey. Why are you always such a weasel? But he is like great. He was like such a like essential 90s actor, you know. He's good.
Yeah, he's really good in this. And so they capture Morpheus. Oh, they go to see the Oracle too, who says that Neo is not computer Jesus.
Yeah, though she also says that the person who is the one will know that they're the one, you know, and nobody can tell them whether they're the one or not. So I don't know if that's like, if that leaves a little wiggle room.
Yeah. And, you know, it is weird looking back, and I'm sure this has been talked about a lot before, as, like I said, people have unpacked the year 1999 in movies so often. But one thing I certainly didn't think about at the time that I did now is how similar Morpheus's story is to The Phantom Menace, which came out around the same time, because they're both about, you know, these guys saying that they think they found the chosen one and mm-hmm. everyone around them being skeptical. Mm-hmm. And like, there's even a part, you know, like the whole thing in Phantom Menace is they say the kid is too old.
Right.
And, they even say that Keanu is like the old, like he's past the point where they would normally bring someone out of the Matrix.
Yeah.
Do they ever say in the movie why, like, what was it about Neo that made Morpheus think that he was computer Jesus?
No. Yeah, they don't really explain that. They're just like, oh, we think he's the reincarnation of the guy who first realized that they were in a Matrix or something like that. I think we're just supposed to take it on faith, maybe, you know, because like that's such a big part of this movie is like believing in, I mean, for Neo, it's believing in himself as like the one or like his own, like, you know, willpower or whatever. And for everybody else is believing that he's the one. You know, and to the point where, like, Morpheus sacrifices himself to let Neo escape, and that's why he gets captured. But, of course, Neo has to go back and save him, and, of course, Trinity is going to go with him. Because we find out later that she knows that he's the one because the Oracle told her that she would be in love with the one. Like, she would be, like, he's the one, like, you know, for her, you know, like, the one. Mm. It's like a,
nice.
It's like a big old romantic comedy thing or something.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I gotta say this. Yeah, this whole second half of the movie or so is very exciting.
Oh yeah,
I think I watched it kind of late at night, and with my wife, and we were, I think, getting to the point where in the training stuff where it was like, maybe, you know, we'll turn it off and watch the rest later. And
at the end, you were like, let's go to a rave.
So let's find the Zion place. This seems lit. No, we were like, yeah, I think we were kind of like, oh, maybe we'll turn it off. And but no, as soon as like all of that started happening, it just is so exciting. And there's so much forward momentum. And yeah, we couldn't turn it off. It was too riveting.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff in the second, like action stuff in the last bit. I mean, it all sort of resolves through the action. There's like the big fight with Agent Smith, and, you know, eventually Neo finds out that, or he, I guess he wills himself to be able to stop the bullets that, you know, Agent Smith is shooting at him, and sort of realizes his power. He does like the big bullet time thing. And then he sort of kills Agent Smith by like going inside of him and exploding him violently. Well,
also, yeah. And also before that, we have a literal resurrection.
Right. That's right. Because he dies, but he's resurrected by the power of Lerv, which...
He dies for all of our computer sins. You know what I'm talking about, Rob.
I deleted those cookies.
Yeah, no. And then another thing, did they ever explain in the other movies why he can fly at the end of this movie, but not in the others? Like, I think he can jump more in the others or something, if I'm remembering correctly. And again, it's been a while, but I don't think he can fly like he does at the end of, at the very end. Like, it doesn't seem like they were necessarily anticipating that they'd be making more of these.
We're gonna have to dial back some of those superpowers, you know. It's sort of the opposite of Superman. He started like, you know, just leaping tall buildings, and then he sort of expanded into flying. But with Neo, they had to cut him back.
He went back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Matrix.
That's the Matrix.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll be back after this short break. I have some behind the scenes and some trivia for you. Don't log off. It's a computer thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about The Matrix. In anticipation of Matrix Resurrections, it's a Christmas movie. I'm counting it. And JM, I have some trivia questions for you.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while since I've done one of these. I might be a little bit rusty, so I'm going to start you off with like a low ball.
Okay.
So Carrie Ann Moss and Joey Pants reunited the next year in which feature film?
Oh, well, this I know. They were both in Memento.
That's right. Yeah. And apparently Carrie Ann Moss actually recommended Joey Pants for the role in Memento. So even though he's sleazy and totally creepy to her in the fiction of this movie, he must actually be a pretty nice guy. They also worked together again in 1999 on this Canadian movie called New Blood, which I think featured John Hurt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they did three in 2 years. So I'm sure they became old pals. But yeah, Joey Pants.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, that's
not in movies though. Creep in movies.
If he shows up in a movie, you have to watch out. But maybe in real life, he's okay. Okay, so which other very head trippy movie does The Matrix recycle the sets of?
Recycle the sets?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow. Head trippy movie.
Yeah.
I know this isn't the answer, but I was reminded of a movie that I think came out the year before, which we've talked about before, which is Dark City.
You know what? You got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess, yeah, because were they both made in Australia?
Probably.
Well, I wasn't even thinking that would be the right answer. I just meant, like, even just story-wise, I was...
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels with the whole, you know, other existence that's happening.
But wait, so what did they share? Because, like, Dark City took place in, like, a faux 1940s...
I don't know. That's okay. I saw it on the internet. You know, they don't give explanations. It might not even be true. I don't know. I have no way of sourcing this. I didn't do a fact check. Okay. I'm not the New York Times.
Perfect. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's funny because, like, that, yeah, that just came out before. And it's also about, like, a guy who realizes that his reality is completely fabricated and kind of breaks out of that. And there are these kind of shadowy weirdos who are controlling everything that he has to try to get away from. I don't know. They're different movies, obviously, but, like, they definitely have a similar vibe.
For sure. And I feel like that was a big theme of things that were coming out in that time, like this other, you know, truer reality that was sort of behind, you know, the surface. There was a lot of that going on.
You know, I almost recommended that we do, to celebrate the new Matrix movie, that we do Existenz.
Oh, I love Existenz. Yeah. Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, we got to do Existenz.
Yeah, I love that movie too. But so this one, I did want to watch this one again specifically because I didn't remember so much of it. But yeah, you're right. There was definitely something in the air. It was like Virtua Boy came out and everyone's like, reality could be a complete fabrication.
Everything's red and black. Yeah. Okay. This one's... Gloria Foster, who plays the Oracle, in 1987, played the part of Medusa Johnson in which comedy movie?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
What's the year?
1987. I almost didn't put this trivia question on there because the star of this movie has had a pretty big fall from grace. Though I think this movie was also a pretty big fall from grace in terms of quality.
Is it a Cosby movie?
It's a Cosby movie.
I don't know, Leonard Part 6.
That's the one. You keep getting these. Yeah, you know, I love looking up people's careers, especially, like, you know, older actors and actresses, especially people of color who, like, maybe haven't been, like, featured or focused on in ways that other actors have been. But this lady, Gloria Foster, mostly worked with Bill Cosby. So, yeah, I mean, not much of her career other than The Matrix is probably going to be, you know, revisited very much.
Wasn't she recast in the second one? Isn't there a different actress playing the Oracle?
Oh, there might be. I didn't look it up.
I have a vague memory of that.
I think she passed away shortly after this movie happened. So I think she died in 2001. I'm not sure when they filmed the Matrix.
Well, she's really great. I love that scene too.
She, like, is great. Yeah,
The whole thing with, like, the vase and
mm-hmm. Great performance.
Much better than that annoying spoon kid. I mean, that kid just phoned it in. I know it's become an iconic movie scene, but come on,
that
was the best kid they could find.
He has, like, a slightly British accent, so I think that is going for him.
Yeah, no, he's fine. I was just kidding. Yeah, we didn't talk about that, the whole there is no spoon thing, but
there was a spoon.
That was a big thing. I know. I saw it right. He was holding
it. Yeah. I have a fourth trivia question.
Okay.
See if you happen to know this one. What was Keanu Reeves' first film movie? Feature film. Feature film performance.
Oh, his first. Wow. Yeah. I should know this. He went to a few different high schools in Toronto, but one of the high schools he went to was the same as me, that was across the street from the theater where I saw The Matrix.
Oh, wow. Did any teachers sort of look, you know, over and be like, he used to come here. We told him he'd never go anywhere.
Then he just disappeared one day and... because we live in the Matrix.
Right.
His first movie. I don't know. I mean,
It's not a huge movie or anything. It is a hockey drama starring Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze called Youngblood.
They became buddies.
They became buddies maybe a little bit more, you know, in their hearts.
Well, that sounds familiar, but I've certainly never seen it.
No, I don't think it was a big movie or anything like that. But, it sort of got him a start, and then he did The River's Edge, and then after that it was all Keanu, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've been hard on Keanu on this podcast before, talking about, like, Dracula and stuff.
You want to make some apologies? That episode where you shit on Keanu was played on the CBC.
I know. I felt bad about that. Because I really like Keanu in general, but I made fun of his accent in Bram Stoker's Dracula, and that was broadcast all across the country, his homeland.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
Terrible, though.
He doesn't need our apologies, because, like, he's done it for himself. Like, you know, at that point, when we made that episode, his career wasn't probably in a great place, and he's, like, really transformed it. I mean, he's really made of himself. Like, he's sort of found his, like, best form, it seems like. Keanu.
Yeah. I mean, he's great. And I do love especially the, you know, his performance in Bill and Ted. Because, I mean, he's just got such great comic timing, and you see that. You don't get to see that as often. As you know, he's called to do, like, dramas or action
movies,
but no, he's often great, sometimes terrible, and just a genuinely good person from the sounds of it. And yeah, he is definitely having, like, a moment with the John Wick movies and the Matrix. And I just love that he's up for it. Like, you know, another Bill and Ted, sure. Another Matrix movie, of course. Like, he's game and, Keanu.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean...
And he made that movie... I know I've talked about this before, but he made that movie about, like, digital versus film.
Right, yeah. I saw that in his filmography, and I thought of your impression of him interviewing David Lynch.
Yeah, because David Lynch just always mentioned his name or in answers to his questions. He's like, well,
do it.
Keanu.
Yes! That's what I wanted.
Yeah. But no, I do like Keanu Reeves. I'm sorry, what's your favorite of his performances? Can you think of one?
I mean, probably Bill and Ted. Bill and Ted's amazing. But yeah. I do love in like the almost so bad.
My Own Private Idaho.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
But The Devil's Advocate, that's amazing. I love that movie.
Okay, is it?
Yeah. But I mean, in like the so, you know, bad it's good sort of way.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
he has like a southern accent or something.
Yeah,
I think.
I don't think accents are his strength, I gotta say.
No. But kicking ass, it's more his thing.
Yeah.
So The Matrix, it sort of started its evolution as an idea for a comic book that the Wachowskis had. And, you know, they sort of wrote it up and sort of developed it into a film. They went through like 17 drafts of it. And they eventually sort of got it in front of Joel Silver, who they were writing Assassins for. And
oh, right, yeah.
He didn't... They really wanted to direct the film themselves, he didn't think that they, you know, were proven or anything. So that is when they sort of wrote and directed Bound, which was a sort of minor success and sort of like as a testing ground for The Matrix. And so,
which is a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they were able to sort of secure some funding for it. Apparently, there's a rumor, I don't know how much truth there is to it, but apparently they asked Warner Bros., who ended up financing the movie, for $80 million, and they only got $10 million. So apparently the Wachowskis went and they blew the entire $10 million on the opening scene. And then they went to Warner Bros. And they were like, they had to give them the rest of the money.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that it went like, it was more like, we spent it. You're going to have to give us. I think it was more confident, but I mean,
I don't know. That might be an apocryphal story. That sounds pretty
It could be
crazy.
Apocryphal. But I think the spirit of it is maybe true. It definitely seems that they went and sort of had to push for a lot of the things that they wanted for this movie.
I read a little bit about this movie in that 1999 Greatest Movie Year Ever book. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to read the whole thing, but I was flipping through it. And I did read one part that said when they asked for the $60 million budget or whatever, they were reluctant. But part of the reason why Warner Brothers greenlit it or gave them the budget was because they spent way more than that on Batman and Robin, and they're like, well, I mean, Batman did poorly, so we might as well roll the dice on this thing that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll accept.
I mean, I said it's a rumor. Again, not the New York Times. There was some crazy.
Okay.
If I have to remind people, I am not the gray old lady herself.
You're not listening to Michael Barbaro right now. This is Rob Laronde.
Believe it or not, though, you could be excused for mistaking it with the level of professionalism. Okay,
Michael Barbaro doesn't sleep on a futon behind a Burger King. Come on.
Hey, it's a Wendy's this week. There were a lot of alternate casting ideas for this movie. The most famous one is Will Smith, who very famously turned down The Matrix for Wild Wild West, which was a bad move on his part. Because Wild Wild West was a badly received movie and The Matrix was The Matrix. Though, who knows whether it would have been The Matrix with Will Smith, you know? I mean, if he sees somebody using a jiu-jitsu program and he's like, I gotta get one of these.
I mean, he does have, a lot of personality.
Yeah.
And I think that is, I think Keanu does have a certain, apart from the fact that he's very handsome, having less charisma works for the ambiguity of the story, where you're not totally sure if this guy is this prophesied savior or not. So if you have Will Smith in there being Will Smith, he's got range obviously, but
yeah,
I don't know. He's just got so much charisma, so much Will Smithness that I think, the hand would be tipped that he's going to be super awesome at the end. Whereas with, Keanu is able to play it a bit more. You're not totally sure if he's going to be up for the job.
I just feel like Will Smith would demand too many jokes. I feel like he would come out of The Matrix and he'd be like, where are my threads? What's with this torn sweater? I got to get me to not the Gap, but somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. I remember when he did iRobot, and he has that very specific wardrobe that he insisted on. The kind of toque thing he's wearing and the sneakers and. Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, it might not be the same movie, but also Wild Wild West is awful.
Imagine Wild Wild West with Keanu Reeves. Different world. The Will Smith version would have teamed him up with not Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus, but Val Kilmer.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, that's what they thought.
I like Val Kilmer. Don't get me wrong, but would have been different.
There were some other very different choices as well. For example, for Neo, they thought Ewan McGregor, though he was busy doing a Star Wars. Also Johnny Depp, and for Morpheus, they thought maybe Russell Crowe, or maybe. Ooh. Just maybe Sean Connery.
No.
Yes.
No.
That's what it... I did not fact check this, but the IMDb has never, never led me astray.
And let me just confirm with... Just to get it on the record. Are you or are you not the New York Times?
No comment.
Okay.
But they did eventually go with Keanu. Now, this movie was sort of brutal on people. First of all, Keanu, he had to have cervical spine surgery before the movie started filming. So apparently throughout the whole movie, he couldn't really kick things. So they had to like change a lot of his choreography so it didn't involve a lot of kicking. I mean, there is one scene where he like kicks Agent Smith or whatever through a wall, and then he sort of has to move his leg very slowly. I wonder if that's because of the surgery.
Well, they should have just like when they were like uploading like the Kung Fu program, they just could have been like, "Oh, I can't find the disc for kicking. We've misplaced the kicking. We're just going to have to upload everything else but the kicking."
I think Cypher downloaded over that disc with internet porn. yeah, but also Carrie Ann Moss, she I think she like twisted an ankle or something while doing a scene, and she sort of pretended that she wasn't injured because she was afraid that she would get recast.
Oh, sure.
Also, I think Lawrence Fishburne got injured, but I don't have the information about that. But yeah, basically, like everybody got their ass kicked doing this film, but apparently we're willing to come back for more. So, you know,
yeah,
yeah, and of course, also, yeah, out of this movie. Sort of, it directly ties to the John Wick franchise, not just because of Keanu, and also Lawrence Fishburne. He shows up in the second and third John Wick movies. But of course, the John Wick movies were directed by the by one of the stuntmen for
right,
The Matrix,
yeah.
Chad Stahelski, I think his name is. And yeah, so I mean, those movies, they sort of share like a DNA, you know, like they're the same. They have like the same sort of like. The same sort of like, I don't know, like they feel like the same in terms of like, you know, action, in terms of like stunts, in terms of almost like video game logic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're very, I mean, I feel like that's one of the reasons for like the John Wick franchise's success is like filling some of that Matrix void, you know, like we haven't had like one of those kick-ass action movies where like the people can actually fight in a long time.
Yeah, I will say I don't love the guns in this movie. And
me
I say
neither.
That as someone that loves a lot of movies with guns, and I don't believe that movie violence inspires real violence necessarily. I'm not saying that this movie, you know, has a corrupting influence, but I do find it I find it hard to watch just because it's like, first of all, it's like within the world of the movie, they're like shooting just like people.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, they say earlier, like, you know, Morpheus is like, if they're part of the system, you know, then they're who we're fighting against. Okay, sure. But then on top of that, I can't help but feel like it's slightly boring in a way, given like the story of the movie, mm-hmm. and that, like, you know, this whole thing is about, like, you know, realizing that the construction of your world is not real, like it's a computer program, like nothing is there, and it's about, like, you know, changing your perception of things so that you can not be bound by like the laws of physics.
Bound.
Yeah, no, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's a trippy idea, but it's like, well, but we're still fighting by, like, you know, loading bullets into guns and like shooting each other. It's like, mm-hmm. what? Why? Like, I don't even understand why, like, the agents who like work for the robots who control the Matrix, like, why are they shooting guns at this?
Why don't they have physical forms at all, you know?
Yeah, can't they just like, I don't know.
Can't they fix this on the back end, like rewrite some code and then, you know, bye-bye Keanu?
But I mean, like, I just, like, I almost feel like the way they should be fighting should be, like, through some kind of, like, psychedelic, almost, like,
yeah,
sorcery or something. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it should move beyond, like, punching each other and shooting each other. And mm-hmm. then on top of that, there was, yeah, and, you know, I think the music is really good in this movie. Like, I love the sort of main, like, just swelling brass mm-hmm. theme that, you know, plays all throughout it. But then, like, the scene where, you know, the real, like, shoot 'em up scene where they go in to rescue Morpheus just has, like, the cheesiest, like, and it's the whole thing with the
generic techno
and the sunglasses and the leather. It's just trying to make, like, you know, just mowing people down with machine guns look as cool as possible.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's hard to look back at that and think that it's as awesome as it maybe seemed to, you know, 15-year-old kids at the time.
I totally agree. And yeah, I mean, I do have a problem with like ultra violence on the screen. Like, yeah, I don't think that it will make anybody go out and cause violence themselves, but no. I don't know. I don't think it's like good, you know. I think that and in this movie, like, I don't think that the logic that allows them to sort of treat these like the oppositional forces as like video game characters really makes sense. You know, they're just sort of like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just sort of an excuse to kill some stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they also don't show like it's not a bloody movie, so like there's this huge high body count, but you don't really see any of the
damage. Any of the like physical consequences, you know.
Yeah, which is just like, you know, allows, you know, I kind of wish, you know, they'd shown that conflict. Like, if you actually showed like how grisly it is to like mow down these people, like, maybe Neo would have like some inner conflict about, you know, just shooting these like a security guard who's just a guy in a pod.
He has a wife and a kid in a pod.
In a pod somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, so that part was a little hard to take now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting old.
Mm. I mean, yeah. I mean, the philosophy of this movie is really interesting. And obviously, like I mentioned, it's been written about by academics a hell of a lot. And but, you know, the movie itself is based off a lot of philosophy as well. In fact, the Wachowskis apparently made all of the main characters sort of agree to not only read but understand Baudrillard, in particular his famous work, Simulation and Simulacra.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you know that old classic.
Yeah, that's where I keep all my mini discs.
Right, that's things. Right. That's the book that Keanu keeps this thing in. Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of references to Baudrillard in the movie. And even in like an earlier draft, Morpheus write out and says Baudrillard in the movie. And the whole the desert of the real, that thing that Morpheus says when he brings
right,
that's a phrase from Baudrillard. So I thought it was sort of interesting. And, you know, last week you guys had like a lot of academic sort of exploration on the podcast, so I wanted to, like, you know, go down that vein a little as well. So I found a YouTube video. There was a guy who did a video that was about Baudrillard's reaction to The Matrix, because here's this big movie that is, you know, basically built on Baudrillard's theories of like the hyperreal and simulation and all of that stuff. But Baudrillard, not a Matrix fan. He didn't dig it. And yeah, okay. Philosophers, they're kind of old and stuffy, and they probably don't watch a lot of movies. But when they tracked him down and asked him about it, he says, yeah, like, you know, it doesn't really do the things that I talk about in the theories. And in fact, the movies that there are movies that have done it and have done it so much better. Movies like The Truman Show what was the other one?
MTV. Well, yeah.
MTV. The other, well, one of them was Mulholland Drive as well. I thought that was really interesting. And yeah, like those are also movies that sort of talk about, like, you know, what it is, you know, to sort of become sort of embedded in a simulation and the sort of the confusion that sort of goes with it. And I guess the Baudrillard's criticism with this movie isn't really about the confusion of living in like the modern reality, because Neo, he's living in the dream world or whatever in his reality, and then he's sort of woken up and sort of realizes that he's in a simulation, but there's no confusion about that simulation, which is like what Baudrillard thinks the modern condition is like. Because, you know, we watch TV, we watch these actors doing things, and all like the simulation and reality sort of collapse into each other, and it becomes hard to distinguish one from the other. So in this movie, like, Keanu, He is told that he's living in a simulation. He agrees to sort of come out of the simulation. And then there's no more sort of exploration of, like, whether there's any lingering effects between, like, having lived in the simulation for all of his life and then being stuck in the real world. So I thought that was really interesting. The video is called What Baudrillard Thought of the Matrix, and it's on YouTube.
Did Neo ever wonder if that was a simulation as well?
Well, I wonder, maybe this is what... I mean, I haven't seen the trailer for the new Matrix movie. And I think, unlike you, I don't really know if I understand, like, the reasoning behind it. And, yeah, I mean, this movie is being directed by one of the Wachowski sisters. It's being done by Lana. But Lily Wachowski, she decided not to be involved. And she sort of said that after transitioning and after her parents dying, she doesn't feel the need to sort of, like, go back into those stories and to film subtext in that sort of way. The way that the sort of Matrix did. But on the other hand, Lana Wachowski says that she felt sort of invigorated, or she felt inspired by those sort of same things to sort of re-explore the world. So I wonder if maybe, like, the new movie will explore more of that, like, the tension between the real and the simulation. Because the other thing that I saw, I didn't actually see the trailer, as I saw that Carrie Ann Moss's character is billed as Trinity/Tiffany. Tiffany.
Oh.
So okay. What does that mean? I mean, are they, like, living in the simulation? Like, what has happened after the end of the last Matrix movie where all of a sudden they have to, like, question reality again? We're seeing, pill, red pill thing.
I think I've heard it takes some big swings. It's also one of the co-writers, I think, is David Mitchell.
Yeah, the Cloud Atlas guy.
The book Cloud Atlas. And who I never read Cloud Atlas, but I've read some other books that he wrote. And I think he's a really terrific writer. And I think he worked with them on Sense8 as well.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what he brings to the storytelling as well.
For sure.
One thing I did want to mention is there have been stories about, or allegations is too strong a word, but people have pointed out that there are a lot of similarities between The Matrix and the comic The Invisibles by Grant Morrison.
Oh.
I don't know, which I hadn't read at the time, but I've since read. It's one of my friend's favorite comics. And yeah, there are definitely a lot of similarities.
This guy's name is Eno? That's just like Neo.
No, I mean, it's not exactly the same. Like, it's not about a Matrix, but it is about, like, there are these kind of, like, agents who are, like, you know, policing this kind of, like, you know, these kind of, is more like kind of punk than, like, this sort of,
right,
like, techno noir thing that the Matrix has going. But you know, it's about, like, policing these rebels who are, like, you know, have kind of, like, figured out the, like, artificialities of the world and how it's kind of, like, controlled by these, like, creatures. Yeah, it's great. And, but there are some similarities. Apparently, there are rumors that, like, they were passing around copies of the book on set for kind of reference. And I did read, I don't know if this is true, again, not the New York Times, not the Times, but, Grant Morrison said something to the effect of, when he saw the sequels, he said, they should have kept stealing from me.
Damn. Yeah, burn.
Which is a real burn. But I'm excited for the new one.
I think I'll watch it.
Oh, and one thing we didn't talk about was that people did say, you know, in recent years, people did look back at this movie and speculate, was it an allegory for, like, the trans experience, for,
right,
like, you know, being awakened to your true self when you were, you know, being restricted.
There's a few things that definitely jump out.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, it's a fine line to walk, because you don't want to, like, be reductive and say, like, oh, because the creators were trans, that necessarily, like, you know, they don't have a broader, you know, point to make about society, that we have to, you know, view the story through this narrow lens. But I think it was Lily who said in an interview not that long ago that that yes, they very much see it as a metaphor for being trans, and they said they even, I think she said they even put, like, like the name Switch in there. Yeah. It's kind of like a
that character a signpost. Was in earlier drafts in the real world. It was supposed to be a woman, and then in the Matrix, it would be played by a man.
So, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, that seems like a pretty obvious sort of nod to that. And there's also a line. There's a line where somebody says something like, "There's some sort of like, I can't remember anyway." But I definitely think that it's there. It's not like the whole movie. There's so much with like. I think it's a really rich movie. I mean, like, yeah, like they were reading philosophy. They were. It's a movie that like spoke to a lot of like that particular moment where like we were creating these new identities, which were comprised of like digital names and digital avatars and all of that sort of stuff. I mean, part of the reason for its success is just that it resonates in all of these different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we all kind of like live in the Matrix with social media.
Exactly.
The only way to get out, pick up a landline from time to time.
Call your grandma.
Put down your smartphone, call your grandma on a landline. It's an interesting movie. I think there is like you said, there are some, you know, kind of like cringy or embarrassing things about it, like some of the styles are very dated, some of the dialogue is a little silly, but I think what makes it work and why I do like so many of the Wachowski stuff is that it's so earnest, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, like it's even like I like it feels like it was made by young people, like, you know what I mean, like it almost like, I mean, you're in a way you're glad it wasn't made by someone who was a little more self-conscious about, you know, like looking silly. It feels like, you know, like young people who read a bunch of philosophy and, you know, had, you know, kind of dorm room conversations about the nature of reality and like wanted to put that in a movie, and they just, and there's no, you know, winking about it or, you know, there's one line early on where like one of the characters says to Keanu Reeves, like, it's my way or the highway, which is like a silly old fashioned line, but it's delivered with such sincerity that, you know, you have to go along with it.
Yeah. I remember that line.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, inexplicably. Totally works because everyone is just believing in it, and they don't pull any kind of like ironic, self-deprecating punches.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well let's give our final sort of assessment. Jam, what did you think of The Matrix?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally rewatchable because it's the friggin' Matrix,
right?
And I mean, yeah, it's not my favorite movie. It's even when it was like a lot of people's favorite movie, it was not my favorite movie, but it's so well told, and the way it's kind of blew up at the time, it's hard to overstate that impact it had. Like,
yeah,
it was just everywhere. I mean,
yeah,
it was nuts. But like we said earlier, that kind of fizzled out. Like, they couldn't sustain. I mean, I don't think it was meant to sustain, like, you know, a trilogy or a franchise, but I really enjoyed going back to it. I'm very curious to see the next few installments and see how they hold up. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. It's, you know, and for better or for worse, there's some parts I truly do not like at all. But I think most of it is, and also just technically, like, they were doing things. I mean, like, the bullet time thing is like a cliche now. And it was, like we said, immediately became like a pulp culture kind of touchstone and punchline and all of that. But like, it was really cool at the time. Like, I remember having the VHS tape, and at the end of the tape, there was like a special feature, like they sometimes did that, where there's like a making of thing after the movie, and it like showed you how they did the bullet time, which was, you know,
it's pretty revolutionary.
Yeah, but it was also like, it was very like, you know, in by the time like the sequel came out, like they were doing so much with CGI that like, you know, whole characters were being CGI. But at that time when they did the bullet time thing, it was just, I guess it was on a green screen, but it was like Keanu on a wire, and then they set up like, you know, 500 or however many.
It was like an Edward Muybridge thing.
Yeah, totally. You're absolutely right. Like they basically created like an animation out of these cameras on this like slope that formed the camera movement. Like it was really cool stuff. Like,
yeah.
And I remember that being like a really exciting thing to learn about at the time. And you have to admire it and think of all the movies that like, even you go see an action movie now, the way the camera moves feels like The Matrix. Like,
oh, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's rewatchable for sure. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I had a bad reaction to this movie when it came out, and I mean, it's pretty obvious that like, yeah, I mean, it's a good movie. It does so much. Yeah, it was a little bit like everywhere at the moment, or at the time. I'm glad that we've all gotten a little bit of time to sort of settle down with it. But I think it is like a really good movie. And it's fun to watch for the most part. It has like lots of like, yeah, really cool ideas. It really synthesizes a lot of like what 1999 was about in terms of like filmmaking and media and all of that stuff. I have to say some of the compositing doesn't look so great anymore. And I also wonder, like, I hate the green tint on all of the scenes that are in The Matrix. I hate it. It's bad. And
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, obviously, like, it's an artistic choice that they're making, which I think works for a lot of people. But, and that also, like, it became the start of, I think, tinting everything in, like, a weird color, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what, yeah, because so many movies after that had that, like, green or blue kind of tint on mm-hmm. everything. But I mean, I think in this, like, it's definitely trying to make a point. It's trying to like,
but again, those monitors, nobody had those green, nobody used that color green. No, that's not I mean, I had a Tandy Color Computer 3 that had that green, but that was from 1984, you know, like okay. But yeah, it's a great movie. It's good. I'm sure that the new one's going to be pretty interesting. So all that's right. The Matrix.
Sure is.
Yeah. And you know, that's rewatchability, and we'll be back soon. And until then, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can give the podcast a review and rate us and everything there. We're also on all those other podcast places, Spotify, Stitcher, if people are still using that. If you want to get in touch with us, it's rewatchability@gmail.com, or you can go to rewatchability.com, leave a speak pipe thing. And I think that's it. Is there anything else?
I just want to say happy holidays to everyone, and hope everyone's having a safe holiday and a happy new year.
Mm-hmm.
And celebrating the birth of Neo.
he you know, they tried to find a pod for him, but they only found the stable equivalent of a pod.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.